Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 103 event, which takes place in Phoenix, Arizona. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we went 0-3 on our premium bets for UFC 207 and Ryzen 4 to lose 4.72 units overall. We also lost our 1-unit free bet on the Ray Borg by submission prop. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 103 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Sunday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between Dmitry Smolyakov, who is 8-1, and Cyril Asker, who is 7-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Smolyakov, minus 175, the comeback on Asker at plus 135. Right now at our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, the line has flipped. It's Asker minus 120 now. Smolyakov is even money. A little bit surprised. I figured that Smolyakov would still get a little bit more public support or a little bit more hype, I guess, coming in, because during his UFC debut, there was definitely a little bit of buzz around Smolyakov. He was a prospect in the heavyweight division that a lot of people were anxious to see. Unfortunately for him, it didn't work out too well. I mean, he ended up suffering a loss to, I think, a very talented heavyweight and underrated heavyweight, honestly, in Luis Henrique. But that being said, Smolyakov did fade in that fight and suffered a loss. I mean, it wasn't a thing of beauty at all. Even though he had his moments in that fight, he ended up getting choked out. So not a good debut for Smolyakov, but at the same time, you could say a lot of the same things for Asker. In his UFC debut against Cannoneer, he just got caught with a beautiful punch. I mean, Cannoneer was definitely landing some good striking before up to that point, but I believe it was a left hand that ended up finally dropping Asker in that fight. And it was a thing of beauty, honestly, from Cannoneer. So I don't think Asker is as bad as his loss was, and I don't think Smolyakov is quite yet either. But that being said, matching up together here, I mean, let's get into the breakdown with Smolyakov basically being a wrestler, grappler, sambo practitioner. His ground game is definitely his best asset. He is light on his feet, though. For his size, he's actually pretty decent. I mean, you wouldn't think that he's able to move as quickly as he does. He's a powerful heavyweight. He likes to push forward when he can, throwing really heavy leather. But that being said, defensively, he is a little bit slow. He does have stamina issues, which I just mentioned as well. His takedown defense overall is pretty solid, but once on his back, he's pretty much useless. I mean, I think to get his submissions, a lot of times he likes to work from the top position, of course, as most people do as well. So from the top, he's more than capable of dropping some bombs and looking for a sub. But off his back, I'm not really that thrilled with him. Now, Asker, on the other hand, again, he basically has a boxing BJJ background. I believe he's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. Has some speed and power to go along with it for, again, a heavyweight fighter. He's a little bit smaller than Smolyakov, and again, will have that speed advantage. And his boxing, actually, I was pretty impressed with overall. I mean, not just in the Cannoneer fight, but looking beyond that, you can tell the guy throws pretty good hands for a heavyweight and has the ability to finish fights on the feet as well. He's well-rounded. He does have a complete game overall. He goes for takedowns as well. So Asker is a pretty well-rounded guy. I just think he's going to have a difficult time using his wrestling, at least early on against Smolyakov. So this is going to be a close competitive fight back and forth, I do believe. I just trust Asker a little bit more, I think, with this cardio, with the stamina. And I think he's going to have the speed advantage, and he could probably land along the way a little bit more often than Smolyakov will. So tough fight to call, to be honest with you. But I do agree with the early public action coming in on Asker. I think that he probably comes out with a win here. So I'm slightly leaning his way as well.
Yeah, I definitely like Asker here. The main thing for this fight is the fact that Dmitry Smolyakov's conditioning was atrocious in his UFC debut. He started mildly strong against Luis Henrique, and then the second he started taking some punishment and he realized that he wasn't going to be able to put his opponent away with ease like he's been able to for the most part in his MMA career, like, he just became a completely different fighter. He's kind of the guy that is great when he's in control, when he's winning, but when he's losing, he loses hard.
And that's exactly what happened against Henrique. Now, Asker is the type of fighter that I don't think Smolyakov will be able to just steamroll. Now, Smolyakov will probably be a little bit stronger, a little bit more physical, but I can see Asker keeping his distance early, looking for some openings. Asker does have some pretty good overall defense and a good chin. He just got clipped by a beautiful combination from Jared Cannonier in his UFC debut. That's just not something that most heavyweights can pull off, especially somebody like Smolyakov, who is a little more lumbering and slower, although Smolyakov is, again, very physically strong. Now, both guys actually do have pretty solid ground games. It's just all going to boil down to, if it goes to the ground, who's going to be the one in control. I expect if it goes to the ground early that it'll be Smolyakov, but if Smolyakov is not able to get a quick finish, I can see Asker getting some takedowns as this fight wears on, and Smolyakov did not look good when he was put into a defensive position. He kind of just turtled up into a shell on the ground, and Henrique just repeatedly punched him as he covered up until he left an opening trying to get to his feet, and he choked him out. So, and it was an insta-tap, too. Like, Smolyakov was ready to get out of there because he was so tired. So, overall, if Smolyakov wins, it's going to be quick. But if he does not get a quick win, pay attention to live betting, potentially, because Cyril Asker, if this fight gets out of the first round, I expect Asker to either get a stoppage or, at least, in the worst, a decision victory. So, I'm going to side with Asker. I think he's tough enough to survive Smolyakov, and he should win. Now, dropping down to the light heavyweight division, we have Bojan Mihajlovic, who is 10-4, taking on Joachim Christensen, who is 13-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have been Christensen minus 245, the comeback on Mihajlovic at plus 175. And right now, looking over five dimes, it is Christensen minus 235. Mihajlovic is at plus 195. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming out of this fight. Tough one to bet. I mean, based on both of these guys, their UFC debuts as well. Of course, let's start off with Mihajlovic first. I mean, he unfortunately for him, he made his UFC debut against Ngannou. I mean, and that was just an ugly fight for him. Ngannou, of course, we all know, is just a beast. I mean, he's rolled through the heavyweight division thus far, had another impressive win recently as well. So, again, Mihajlovic coming in and losing that fight, it's not surprising. He was supposed to lose that fight. I figured it would go like that. So he's dropping down, though, for this fight, obviously, to light heavyweight. And I think he does physically benefit from the drop to light heavyweight. In fact, he's still going to be a small guy for light heavyweight as well. So he could still possibly, depends how he looks at the scales here, even think about possibly moving down to middleweight at one point. I don't know if his body can actually do that or not, because he is a pretty strong, powerful guy. But with that frame, it might be possible, and I think that would be better suited for him. So we'll see how he does here at light heavyweight against Christensen. Christensen, a very talented fighter, but unfortunately for him, he did suffer a setback in his UFC debut. What looked to be a rough round one for him against Henrique da Silva, he was rebounding in round two, looked pretty good, and then actually got caught by submission. His first submission loss of his career in round two, when things were kind of looking a little bit better for him. But Christensen's a pretty well-rounded fighter. I mean, at age 38, I think he definitely fights younger than his current age overall. I mean, the guy always shows up in decent shape. He's a pretty well-rounded guy, tough as nails, usually has no quit in him. I mean, from all the footage that I've seen before his UFC debut. Now, again, he did get caught in that armbar, which was kind of a head scratcher the way that fight was going for him in the second round. But still, there's a lot to like about Christensen's game, because he is so well-rounded. I think on the feet, he definitely uses his length well. He's got good stand-up game. He's aggressive when he needs to be on the ground. He does go for takedowns. He does get top position, and he's very effective with his ground and pound. He has a submission game to go along with it. So he's a pretty talented fighter all around. And again, looking back at his pre-UFC fights, I mean, you could tell how really good and durable he can be. Now, Mihajlovic, on the other hand here, again, looking back at his pre-UFC resume, it was actually pretty weak overall. He hasn't fought some of the same caliber of competition that Christensen has fought throughout his career. But on the feet, again, he is a well-rounded fighter overall. He has some power and aggression. Not that great anywhere, though. That's the problem with Mihajlovic. I mean, even on the ground, he's not going to overwhelm you with his jiu-jitsu game or his wrestling game. So he's just basically pretty solid everywhere, has a little bit of power, and I think he's going to be more dangerous than anywhere on the feet in this fight as well. So he's going to look to basically keep this fight upright and try to land a big bomb out of Christensen here. I just don't think he's going to have success here either, though. I think Christensen is tough enough to withstand the heavy punishment that Mihaljevic is going to throw his way, and I think what's going to happen here is the length and the overall skill of Christensen is going to be a little bit too much for him. He's going to pick Mihaljevic apart, possibly get this fight to the ground and stop it on the ground as well. So I think there's just more ways to win. If this fight does somehow, some way hit the scorecards, I do see Christensen winning a decision. So just more ways to win for him. That's why he's a solid 2-1 favorite over Mihaljevic. I think this is, again, a better suited division for him, but I still think it's going to be the same result. He's going to end up losing this fight and probably by a stoppage here. So Christensen is my pick. I do like what I see from him. Unfortunately for him, we'll see where his career does go, starting off 0-1, 38 years old. Not sure how far he can go, but the guy definitely has skill to win a few fights in UFC.
It was almost unfair for Mihaljevic in his UFC debut, taking on Francis Ngannou, who is just one of the best heavyweights on the planet at this point and potentially a future contender or champion. He just stood zero chance in that fight. This time around, though, Mihaljevic should have a little bit more success, but again, he's facing, even though he's dropping down a weight class, he's facing a guy who is huge for the division in Joakim Christensen. Christensen has 4 inches in height on Mihaljevic, and he should have a respectable reach as well. And Christensen knows how to use it. He has pretty solid kicks. He has a good straight jab. But actually, where Christensen is at his best is on the inside. He has some nasty knees. One of them dropped Luis Enrique da Silva. And Christensen also has some sharp elbows that he can mix things up in combination with his punches. So he's definitely a well-rounded fighter, and I can understand why people were high on him as he entered the UFC. He looked good in that fight right up until he lost. It was crazy. Mihaljevic, I do not expect to be much of a threat on the feet. Granted, in his last fight, he was just spending most of it running in terror from Ngannou, trying to find openings to get it to the floor. And this time around, he should have a little bit more success on the feet against Christensen because Christensen's defense isn't so hot, but I still don't expect him to have much. And where Mihaljevic needs this fight to go is the floor. Christensen was submitted in that UFC debut. It was kind of fluky, just came out of nowhere at a time when he was dominating the fight. But if Mihaljevic can get Christensen on his back, that's the best position he needs. It's just his problem is Christensen has pretty good takedown defense, and with his size, if he can either keep Mihaljevic at bay with his jabs or just start pounding on him with elbows and knees on the inside when Mihaljevic tries to get some clinch takedowns, I think he can just really do some damage and make Mihaljevic pay for his efforts to get the fight to the floor. And if it does go to the floor, I do think Christensen's ground game is better than he showed. So overall, I just think Christensen is the better fighter. He looked better in his UFC debut than Mihaljevic, and I think that he does get that first UFC win. So Christensen is my pick. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division for a pair of UFC newcomers, we have Devin Powell, who is 8-1. Taking on Drakkar Klose, who is 6-0-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Klose, -215, the comeback on Powell at +165. Right now, over five dimes, is Klose, -235, the comeback on Powell is +195. So staying pretty steady, but a little bit of a raise there on Klose. I think that's right, the early action so far with the slight increase. I think Klose is the better fighter in this fight. He is taking this fight on short notice. He's in for Rinaldi, actually. So that is something to look out for. But from what I've seen from Klose in the camp that he comes from, MMA Lab, and the training partners he has, he's always at least seems to be in fight-ready shape. So I don't think it's going to be a big issue with him stepping in on short notice. He's had some time to get ready for this fight as well. But getting into the matchup, I mean, this is a tough fight. There's a lot more hype on Klose than there is Powell coming into this fight for sure. Klose is supposed to be the up-and-coming hyped prospect out of the two. He's got the wrestler's background, the collegiate wrestling background, I should say. He's an explosive athlete with KO power. And again, developing skill set. And I mentioned that he does train with a good camp. So there's a lot of good things that we've heard, not just right now, I mean, the last couple of years, we've heard some good things about Close. So he's finally making it over to the UFC. And from what I've seen thus far, he belongs. He's definitely a very well-rounded, capable fighter that's always going to consistently improve and be better fight by fight. So his fight with Powell, though, coming into this, is going to be a tough one because Powell, his skill set-wise and his length in this fight, I mean, he's going to have a huge reach advantage. Well, I guess we'll start off there first. This is UFC debut again for Powell, and he's a long-rangey fighter. I mean, he's going to have, I believe, at least a 4-inch pure reach advantage over Close in this fight. And Powell is a pretty tricky fighter because along with that reach, he does have some skill. I mean, he utilizes that reach advantage well. He's got decent striking. He mixes everything up well, but he's a little bit more kick heavy on his attack. I mean, he does land. He has such a good ground game. He's one of these fighters that is not afraid to go to the ground. Even if he ends up in, on the bottom, actually, he'll actually pull guard sometimes to get the fight to the ground as well. That's the type of fighter, Powell is, because he's so confident with his ground game that he's willing to just throw a kick heavy attack. And he does damage with some of these kicks as well. So it's not like he's just throwing them out there and they're with no intent. He definitely has some skill and he's got some accuracy with those kicks and his stand up game overall. He's got a little bit of power, but on the ground, it's where it's at for Powell. So it's not like I'm saying Powell's a tremendous striker. I think actually if it plays out on the feet, outside of Powell's kicking attack, Close definitely has the advantage on the feet if he keeps it upright. I think Close's boxing is going to come into play, and he is the better striker out of the two. But Powell can be a little bit tricky definitely on the feet with those kicking attack that I was just stating there. But on the ground is where Powell, I think, is the most effective and most dangerous. I mean, he has the kind of submission game with that length to go along with it and the technique and the skill that, I mean, you make a mistake, he's on your back right away. He's looking for the choke. He's looking for the arm bars, the triangles. I mean, he's really slick with his submission skill. You can't make many mistakes on the ground with a guy like Powell. And that's how he's getting a lot of his wins. It's by finish as well. So he's capable of winning the fight by knockout. He's capable, I think, more capable of winning the fight usually by sub as well. So he is a dangerous guy to fight and be in there with making your debut. So this is going to be an interesting fight. I think if Close does not get caught up in anything like any submission attempt or any mistake that he makes from Powell, I think he wins this fight. I think he has a potential to stop Powell because his power and his athleticism and everything that he brings to the table can be effective enough that it could be Powell's first setback in his career as far as a finish goes, a finish loss. Outside of that, I think Close does win on the scorecards if it goes that route as well. So Powell basically, in my opinion, has to win this fight inside to win at all. And I think he's not going to probably get that done. I have to lean a little bit more towards Close in this fight. I do believe in the hype a little bit from what I've seen. And I just think he's just a little bit better than Powell. Now, Powell, even if he does suffer a loss, I think if he does get another shot in the UFC and they match him up right, he can get a win. No doubt about it. He can pull together a couple wins. But unfortunately for him, I don't think it's going to be this fight. I think Close wins this fight.
When I watched Devin Powell earn his opportunity to fight in the UFC from the Looking for the Fight show, it was a fight where he spent most of it on the feet, got beat up a little bit, had his nose mashed up pretty nasty, but he responded well to that adversity, and then was able to pick up a finish by, dropping his opponent and then, taking them out. So even though that's actually not the way Powell has fought most of his fights, I thought that was a pretty impressive performance, and he showed a lot of guts in that fight. But for the most part, Powell is actually a ground fighter. So realistically, Drakkar Close is going to be looking to keep this fight in the stand-up and just try to really punish Close with some big, powerful strikes. Close does have more of a kicking attack on the feet, likes to attack low kicks. He doesn't have a ton of power in the hands, but if he catches you clean, he can do some damage. Powell's biggest issue is that he's just not particularly athletic. If you watch him, he's definitely a bit slower. His reactions just aren't there. He doesn't kind of have that explosiveness to his attack. And that's something that Drakkar Close definitely possesses. Close hails from Michigan, where he was, I believe, an all-state wrestler. And then now he trains out of the MMA lab, where he's one of the top training partners of Benson Henderson and Scott Holtzman, two guys that have had some success in the UFC. And honestly, I think Close is a guy to really keep an eye on. He has some nasty power on the feet. He has really good, quick movement, very light on his feet. He does have that explosiveness. He is an elite athlete, and I think he's the type of fighter that's going to give Devin Powell fits, especially because of that all-state wrestling. I think that he can either avoid the ground or scramble quickly back to his feet if it does go to the ground. So Devin Powell, I believe, is going to be forced into a stand-up fight against a guy that is just going to be quicker to the punch against him. And I expect that Dragar Close does some serious damage to Powell en route to probably getting a TKO victory or at least a decision. So my pick is going to be Dragar Close in his UFC debut. Now moving on to the Fight Pass headliner, we have a women's strawweight contest between Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, who is 6-3, and Nina Anzorov, who is 6-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Liebarger -140. The comeback on Anzorov, even money. Right now, looking over at five dimes, it's Anzorov 140. Liebarger is actually +120. So the line has flipped. And I'm a little bit surprised. I honestly, again, a spot where I figured Liebarger would get a little bit more respect than Anzorov. She seems to be a little bit more popular amongst the MMA community. I thought she would be with the MMA bettors as well. Anzorov in the past has had a tendency of slowing down in fights. She just doesn't seem to get that respect. I think a lot of people think she's not an easy out, but at the same time, she's just not a good quality fighter, where Liebarger, I think, has the potential to at least progress her career to get kind of in the mix and be a little bit more relevant. But that being said, I think the early action is correct. I think this is going to be a barn burner type of fight. It's going to be close. I mean, both these ladies can make a case how they win this fight, and it could be activity from Liebarger. She definitely has some good boxing. She keeps a high pace usually. She has some wrestling to go along with it, so she's a very well-rounded, talented fighter. She's just faced some very tough competition so far in her UFC career. I mean, if you look at it, she debuted against Tisha Torres, which is always going to be a tough fight. She performed relatively well in that fight, but Tisha beat her by decision. And then Marcos fought a really good fight against her as well. It was competitive. Liebarger was in that fight, but Marcos ended up edging her out there as well. So two really highly ranked females that she made her debut and then having a second fight against. And now she's fighting another one in Anzorov, where she might not be as ranked or as highly rated as the other two, but she is no slouch at all. I mean, of course, first of all, we have to mention right away that she's Amanda Nunes's girlfriend, training partner, whatever you want to say there. I mean, she's been training on American Top Team with Nunes, and it's definitely going to help her mentally. Obviously, the training is not going to hurt either, fighting a heavier, stronger, great striker like Nunes, training with somebody like that. It's always going to rub off and make you a little bit better as well. But outside of that, I mean, Anzorov definitely, again, from a good camp, she looks to be a pretty good fighter overall, always underrated throughout her career. Because if you look back at her as well, I mean, it's not like she's fought slouches, you know, throughout her time in MMA as well. Not even just in the UFC. I'm talking about even before that. So she has about a 500 record, but I think she's, again, severely underrated. She's a pretty good fighter. She gets better fight by fight. She's well-rounded. What I like about Anzorov, I think, is the power that she throws with every strike. I mean, her, again, in the past, she's had the tendency to slow down as the fight goes a little bit, but her output is actually getting better, and it's a little bit more consistent. Now, she does, again, tend to slow down in round three a little bit, might not be as high, but I still think her cardio is getting a little bit better. And I think the power and the effectiveness of her strikes is going to be the difference here in this fight against Liebarger. I think she's going to be the one landing the harder punches. I think she is going to be active enough that she's going to be able to kind of go back and forth with Liebarger, and I think she's going to bully Liebarger around a little bit too. I think she could put some pressure up against the cage, kind of make this an ugly fight, and again, be the stronger, the harder hitter. And I think that's going to probably be well for the judges' scorecards for Anzorov. I don't expect this fight to really not go to the cards. I do expect a decision either way, and I expect it to be a very competitive fight. But I just think that Anzorov, honestly, is the better fighter of the two right now. Again, mentally, I think she's going to be in a good place. I think physically, she just has a step ahead of Liebarger. I think she's going to be a little bit more active throughout the fight and landing the harder punches, and I think it's going to win her the fight, basically, is what it comes down to. So the wrestling, all the ground games should kind of neutralize each other out a little bit. Both these ladies do go for the takedowns. They both have decent takedown defense as well. So I think that kind of is a push, and it's going to stay upright for the most part. Ugly fight. Anzorov kind of edges it out. That's my take on it, so I'm picking her to win.
Obviously, so far, both of these girls' runs in the UFC have been disappointments. Liebarger came in with a bit of hype after really having a great performance against Zoila Frosto, and just really has had a bit of a letdown. Granted, she's faced some good opposition. Tisha Torres is one of the top women in the division, and then Randa Marcos at one point was getting pretty close to title contention before falling off a little bit. Anzorov, same thing. Juliana Lima is a top 15 fighter, and so is Justine Kish, in my opinion. She's right there undefeated, and she gave Kish one hell of a fight. Now, Liebarger's biggest issue so far has been the fact that she's just been outworked by her last two opponents. She came into the UFC as kind of a dangerous striker, and she's been outstruck by her first two opponents, including Marcos, who, while she does have some decent striking, that hasn't really been her forte. She's always been a little bit more wrestling-focused. And the fact that Marcos was able to throw and land about 20 or 30 more strikes than Liebarger is a cause for concern, because Nina Anzorov is a really major high-volume striker. If you watched her fight against Justine Kish, where she was basically in there against a striker, Anzorov was just nonstop combinations, kicks. She just was landing counters. She was having moments where she was just pushing the tempo and leading. And she doesn't really throw just one strike like Liebarger likes to do sometimes. Anzorov likes to throw five or six strikes. Now, they're not the most powerful strikes in the world, but they do add up and they do do some damage. So Liebarger is really going to have to either up the tempo a little bit or counter hard against Anzorov when she starts to leave some openings. So I expect this fight to be extremely entertaining. It should have a really high pace. The one side effect of Anzorov's really high tempo, especially early in the fight, is she does tend to fade off a little bit as the fight wears on. So that could be a side effect, and that could be something to keep an eye on. But for the most part, I just really like Anzorov's pace. I think she's had a tough situation so far where she's been in there against two really talented opponents. And I think this is a good stylistic matchup for her against someone that's going to let her set the tempo. And I think Anzorov is going to be up for the challenge. And I think we haven't seen her in a while. And I think this time around, we're going to see probably the best that she can offer. And I expect Anzorov to win a pretty dominant decision here. Now moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card. It's back up to the heavyweight division as we have Walt Harris, who is 8-5, taking on Chase Sherman, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened this fight exactly pick minus 120 either way. So minus 120 Harris, minus 120 Sherman. And right now it's actually Harris as a slight favorite at five dimes. It's minus 135 Harris. Comeback on Sherman is at plus 115. So a little bit more action coming in Harris's way. This one, not surprised. I know Harris is a little bit more popular again amongst the MMA community out there and the bettors. So Sherman not going to get a ton of respect. But in my opinion, both these guys have definitely a lot of flaws, but they also have a lot of good things that they can bring towards, you know, this fight in the heavyweight division as well, and a lot of finishing ability amongst the two. I mean, both of these guys, heavy hitters. If they land, obviously they can put their opponents out. And not just that, I mean, both these guys are more, again, well-rounded than this as well. They do look for some takedowns from time to time, but the ground game is not where it's at. This is going to be a slugfest, and the first person that really makes a mistake is going to get put down. I mean, as far as chins go, I trust Sherman's chin just a little bit more than Harris's. But again, both these guys have so much power that it could realistically go either way. So I think pick 'em is a fairly accurate line here. I know that Harris, he's a little bit more athletic. He's going to be a little bit quicker of the two for sure. I trust his cardio a little bit more as well. So I can understand the slight lean towards Harris. But I think that Sherman, honestly, he had to kind of prove something to me in his last fight against Ledet. I really did believe Ledet was going to win that fight, and which he did. And I, to me, it was pretty clear how he went about it. But Sherman, even though he lost that fight, and before that fight, I didn't think he would make it. I thought he would have that quit in him. I thought that once he started getting tired, he'd find a way out, and he did not. So I think what we're going to see here from Sherman, that he finally was tested and pushed to the max, is a little bit more confidence in his game, that he knows he can go three despite the loss. Obviously, that's not going to sit well for him. He might be a little bit more motivated coming to this fight, but he's going to know that he can go three rounds in the UFC. So I think his cardio might be a little bit better coming into this fight against Harris, but still he's going to be at a disadvantage there. I just think that Sherman's going to be in there. He's been pretty tough overall. And again, I do trust his chin a little bit more. And if these guys are exchanging, even though Walt Harris, I do think he has a slight edge in the stand-up department. Again, being a little bit more athletic, I think he mixes things up a little bit better, and I think he could definitely land on Sherman, but I think Sherman's going to be able to withstand a little bit more than vice versa. I think Sherman's power is going to be a little bit too much for Harris. So if this fight hits the scorecards, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, I doubt it does. I mean, it's a heavyweight fight. These guys are going to be throwing down and kind of both slowing down as the fight goes. But it should be interesting if it does go to the cards. And I think along the way, somebody's going to sleep. And I think probably Sherman comes away with a win. Again, not a hugely confident pick here, but I'm going to go against the public here or the grain here and pick Sherman to get the W. And I think he's going to look a little bit better than most people are expecting in this fight.
I think this fight's going to be really close, especially in the first round when both guys have the most gas in their tank. Harris is a big-time power puncher. As is Sherman. Sherman definitely can mix it up pretty well. He has some very strong low kicks that I think can do some real damage in that first round. But I am a little bit worried about how Sherman performs as the fight wears on. I mean, he expended a lot of energy in his UFC debut in that first round. He looked pretty good in there. And then second and third rounds, he got blown out of the water by Justin Ledette, who just boxed him up and landed over 100 significant strikes on him over the course of three rounds. That's a lot. He ate a lot of damage. And I mean, Sherman, he didn't quit, but he still, I mean, that defense was not good. And I think against somebody like Harris, who can really pack a wallop, it's not something you want to be on the receiving end of. Now, I do expect that Sherman's conditioning will be a little bit better this time around. We do often see guys gas out kind of quickly in their UFC debuts just because the adrenaline's pumping so hard. Now he's got that behind him. I expect Sherman to look a little bit better this time around. But Walt Harris, I think he really has taken his game up a notch. He clearly wasn't ready for the UFC the first time we saw him, but now that he's come back, he was able to get that impressive performance over Cody East, another guy that has a similar style in of fighting to Chase Sherman. And then in his last fight, Walt Harris, I mean, barely lost a split decision to Shamil Abdurakhimov, a guy that is a pretty top UFC heavyweight, definitely in the top half of UFC heavyweights. So the fact that Harris was able to be that competitive with a guy that has a really well-rounded skill set speaks some volumes. And I think if Harris can bring those developments and improvements into this fight, then I think he can either blow Sherman out of the water in the first round, or he might be able to win a decision if it does go all three rounds. So I think Walt Harris can pull this out, so he's going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Tony Martin, who is 10-3, taking on Alex White, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have been Martin minus 155, the comeback on White plus 115. This line out of all of them actually skyrocketed the most. It's right now, it's Martin minus 280, the comeback on White is plus 240. So, needless to say, Martin is definitely the popular bet here in this fight. A lot of it, I think, has to do with White taking this fight first on short notice. And second of all, obviously, he fights at 145, and this is at lightweight. So a lot of people are automatically thinking Martin's going to be way bigger, way stronger. And that is going to be a factor here, especially early on in the fight, no doubt. I mean, as far as length goes, I mean, they're going to be pretty similar. I believe Martin's only going to have a 2-inch reach advantage. And I don't think White's going to be small, even for the lightweight division, honestly, even though Martin's going to be a little bit physically bigger, stronger, I think White's still not going to be small by any means. So this is going to be an interesting fight, especially if it gets out of round one. And that's the factor here with Martin, and it seems to be kind of his history throughout, I mean, his UFC career, at least thus far. I mean, Martin is the type of fighter that he's got a lot of tools. I mean, his stand-up game's not bad. He's always developing it. He can be very effective with his hands. He's got a little bit of power. He mixes everything up fairly decent as well, but it's his ground. It's his wrestling. It's his jiu-jitsu game offensively that is very impressive with Martin. I mean, he's coming off of an impressive win over Oliveira about a year ago. I mean, he won that fight by a rear naked choke. But after that, he did have a surgery. He was out for about a year again. So that is an issue, in my opinion, as well. I mean, we don't know how he's going to perform. Obviously, he's had enough time to recover. And I mean, from all signs so far, even Martin himself getting on Twitter, our Twitter account, saying, hey, look, I'm going to win this fight. He seems like he's ultra confident right now mentally. He's ready to win this fight. I think it doesn't help or doesn't hurt, I should say, his cause that he's fighting a guy again. He thinks, hey, this guy's bumping up. He's not even in my weight class. I know I can get him. White's taking this fight on short notice. Just ultra confidence right now showing for Martin, which is good. I mean, you want to see a fighter have that kind of confidence. But the fact remains that as the fight goes, this was a one-round fight, I mean, Martin for sure, I think, would be a very confident pick for me. But it's not, because this fight could go into deeper waters. If Martin doesn't finish White, I think round two, round three, White has some skill. I mean, these guys are actually similar in a lot of ways where they do have a well-rounded skill set. White has some power on the feet. He's not bad at all. I mean, he has the ability to strike with Martin on the feet for sure. And he's got enough knockout power to make things interesting. I mean, Martin, even though he hasn't been officially knocked out in his career, he's been rocked a little bit. And as he slows down a little bit, White could be even more effective. And on the ground, White doesn't have bad wrestling. That's going to be the interesting part. Obviously, Martin should have the advantage in this fight, especially early on. But White's more than capable of fighting underground. I mean, his jiu-jitsu is actually pretty decent as well offensively. Defensively, I think he's more defensively sound than Martin is underground as far as his ability to stop and defend a sub. So Martin's slick enough that I wouldn't be surprised at all if he does end up finishing this fight underground, even though White's never officially been submitted. But that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if White hangs in there long enough and makes things interesting in round two and round three. Now, I should mention that in the past, White has slowed down in his own right. I mean, he's been in some wars and he's fought and he hasn't been as strong in round two and round three. But I think here, not having to cut that extra weight is going to actually benefit White. I think he's been out for a while as well. I think he's been out of all of 2015 and basically fought last time in February 2016. So he hasn't been consistent at all. I mean, spending all of 2015 out and then having one fight, and it's been about a year ago as well, isn't really a good thing for White. But at the same time, I think both these guys are going to come in and just test each other out in all areas of the game, and I think it's going to be a lot more competitive than everybody thinks. So I am going to pick Martin to win, because I think that, again, he does have the advantage as far as, especially early in the fight, and being a little bit stronger, but not as confident as everybody else out there. I think the line being way over 2-1, almost 3-1 right now, is kind of ridiculous. I don't trust Martin that much. I mean, if he comes out here and really shows us, you know, that everything, surgery was a success, his cardio is up to par, and he just steamrolls White, then that's going to be one thing. But I'm going to have to see it to believe it here. So I'm going to pick him to win. I think he has got the potential and the tools to actually make a pretty decent run. I mean, his fight IQ is another thing we have to talk about with Martin. He does make some mistakes along the way, but a lot of it is, again, I think has to do with his cardio. So expecting to see a better Martin here, but I still think it's going to be a very difficult fight, and he cannot underestimate White. White's going to come to fight, and White has a skill set to be a difficult matchup for even Martin. So Martin's the pick, not as confident as all of you out there. So I'd be cautious betting this fight.
While Alex White is moving up to the lightweight division on short notice to take this fight, he's not actually giving up a ton of size. He's the same height as Tony Martin. He's only 2 inches shorter reach than Tony Martin, 1 inch leg reach. So both of these guys are big for their divisions, but White actually isn't that small compared to Martin. So that's actually a good thing. So it's not like he's going to be blown out if this does turn into a striking battle. But I am definitely concerned about what happens if this fight goes to the ground, because Tony Martin is very physically strong, and he just steamrolls some people on the canvas. Now, he isn't always able to win. Sometimes he has guys in really bad positions and they get out of him, and then he gets tired, and then they turn the tides on him and end up beating him. But especially early in fights, Tony Martin is an absolute monster. And we've seen it time and time again against guys that were very talented. Like, he's faced multiple fighters that are currently ranked in the top 15, and he's had them all in big trouble in the first round at some point. So, that is definitely something to keep an eye on. Alex White needs to survive the first round. Now, as we've heard, Tony Martin has said that one of the reasons that he's had some conditioning issues is because of his training. When he had that neck injury, he'd be only able to train about 3 weeks, and then he'd have to take a week off to let his neck heal. And eventually it just got so bad that it wasn't healing even after the week off, and then he just had surgery on it. So if he comes back and he's able to train nonstop and his conditioning is on point, I don't see how Tony Martin loses this fight. His stand-up is getting a lot better. He's doing the training with Mark Della Grotti at Team Sityongtong. And obviously the ground game has never really been an issue, but It's always been conditioning. So we'll see what happens this time around. If Martin's conditioning fails him and he's not able to bully Alex White like he thinks he can, then he's going to have his hands full. White looked great in his last fight against Artem Lobov. He just picked him apart and was able to easily win a decision. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal how good he looked. So if he can bring that same level to this fight, and if he can keep it upright and keep that pace going, then he's going to be in pretty good shape. It's just all about whether or not he doesn't allows Tony Martin to get inside on him. And I'm just not quite convinced that he'll be able to do that. I think Martin's going to have a big strength advantage in this fight. And if Martin can get his hands on White, then I think that he can make something happen. So I'm going to side with Tony Martin here. Now, moving again back up to the heavyweight division, we have Alexei Oleinik, who is 50-10-1, taking on Victor Pesta, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Oleinik, minus 155, the comeback on Pesta, plus 115. Right now, looking over at Dimes, it is minus 145. Oleinik, the comeback on Pesta, is plus 125. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming into this fight. Not a lot of people really anxious to go crazy on this fight either. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we have basically a 40-year-old in Oleinik that's been around for a long time. I mean, this guy's had over 60 fights and MMA, more than that, obviously, off the record, all that stuff. So he's been around the sport for a long time, a true vet. He's fought great competition throughout his career. And obviously, he's a very dangerous and capable heavyweight, especially finishing fights and on the ground more so than anything. I mean, the guy gets you on the ground with his neck cranks, with his unorthodox but effective jiu-jitsu style, grappling style. Oleinik is a very dangerous guy to be in there with. And not just that, on the feet these days, he's packing a punch. I mean, he definitely has some power on the feet. He's going after it. His accuracy has improved a little bit as well. So he can be effective enough to just, you know, not even have to go to the ground in most cases in the heavyweight division this far. He lands you on the feet, clip you, put you out. So he's got ways to win this fight. Definitely capable of finishing a lot of heavyweights, including Pesta. I mean, Pesta is one thing that bothers me about him is, I mean, you could tell the guy has a ton of potential as well, and he's just underperformed thus far. I know he's had some difficult matchups, I guess, throughout. I mean, his last fight against Tabura, I think, is underrated and is improving as well. But that knockout loss does not sit well. I mean, Pesta, the fight before that against Lewis, he was doing really well and then gassed out. He's just a little bit too flawed right now, and he's not improving as much as you'd like to see. I mean, he's only 26 years old. You would think fight by fight he takes some big steps forward, even against solid competition, and we haven't really seen that. So I don't really trust him as much. I mean, his chin is a little bit suspect at times as well. Oleinik does have some power on the feet, like I just mentioned, even though I think Pesta would like to keep this fight upright, obviously, and test that old chin of Olenek's. I mean, again, 40 years old throughout the MMA years that he's had on his body. I mean, his chin is definitely suspect. So Pesta could land and knock Oleinik out for sure. I think that's very possible. But that being said, I don't know if you could trust Pesta these days either. I mean, we have to see a little bit better from him. I mean, that's what you expect. He's, again, a type of fighter that can land some punishment on the feet. He's usually the one that tries to take you down, get on top on the ground as well, land some ground and pound and control the fight that way. I just don't know if he's going to have a lot of success here against Oleinik. So this is a tough fight for me. I mean, is youth going to prevail, or is the savvy vet that's dangerous going to come through? I think I have to go with Olenek's finishing ability a little bit more than Pesta right now. And so Pesta shows that he can survive against a dangerous finisher and he starts to improve his overall game. I just can't trust him enough yet. So I'm going to pick Oleinik to win this fight.
This is a bit of a tricky fight to call. I mean, based on experience and overall technical ability, Alexei Oleinik should win in a landslide. But then you look at performance, and Oleinik looked so rusty and sloppy in his last fight against Daniel Emelianchuk, a fighter that, honestly, he should have been able to hold his own with on the feet and then dominate on the canvas. And he just didn't happen. He had his moments on the ground, and then he got tired. And then Emelianchuk, of all people, was able to repeatedly take him down and get top position. I mean, it was just a really, really sloppy and ugly fight. And that was after about a year and a half off. Now, thankfully, he's only been away for 6 months this time. So hopefully he didn't get out of shape and he's not rusty, because That was seriously, that was by far the worst he's looked inside the octagon. Pesta, on the other hand, man, he hasn't looked so great either. I mean, he looked okay in the first round against Derek Lewis, and then he just slowed down badly, had a lot of trouble getting Lewis to the floor, ate some nasty punches, and then got put out in the third round. And then in his last fight, I mean, he just got absolutely smashed by a head kick. So he's on back-to-back knockout losses, and that's not a good sign for a young heavyweight. And it's not like he's getting a gimme here. I mean, Olenek is extremely experienced. His ground game is the real deal. I mean, he's tapped out Krokop. He has a lot of tricks in his bag that he can pull off that most heavyweights have never seen before. So if this fight goes to the floor, I would expect Olenek to not just win, but submit Pesta. And Pesta does have a bit of a tendency to look for takedowns and try to get fights to the floor. But again, Olenek also gassed pretty badly in his last fight. And if Pesta just perseveres enough, maybe he can wear down Olenek and then get in a position where Olenek just can't do anything about it. So, like I said, tough fight to call, but I'm going to side with experience here. Olenek has shown that he has some power in his hands, so maybe he can knock Pesta out on the feet. And then I do think that it, especially early in this fight, that Olenek's ground game is dangerous enough that he can catch Pesta with something and potentially tap him out as well. So I'm going to side with Alexei Olenek. Now, moving on to the main event of the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a flyweight contest between John Moraga, who is 16-5, and Sergio Pettis, who's 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Open Pettis minus 175, the comeback on Moraga at plus 135. Right now, it's Pettis minus 135, Moraga is plus 115. So line has dropped. Everybody coming in on Moraga. Again, I get it. I mean, realistically, if you look at Pettis' kryptonite, what is it? It's guys that have a ton of knockout power that have clipped that chin and put him out. I mean, throughout his career thus far, I mean, obviously Pettis has had it tough. He's had to live up to his brother's hype, and it's not always easy to do. But I'll tell you what, Sergio is definitely a talented fighter, underrated fighter. If you look out, again, throughout his career so far in the UFC, the guy could easily be undefeated. He was winning every fight. I mean, the two losses that – he did suffer in the UFC so far. I mean, we're comeback wins from Benoit and Caceres. So Pettis has been doing really well, but it only takes one strike at times to just kind of change the complexion of a fight. And that's what's happened to him. But throughout that, I mean, he's been pretty impressive again. And he's one of those fighters that continues to improve, only 23 years old still. And he is getting better. He's getting physically stronger. He's filling in a little bit more as far as just, you know, I mean, being again in his early 20s, he's going to get a little bit more strength as he grows, gets a little bit older. Obviously, the weight cut's going to be a little bit more difficult for him, but he's been managing to make the cut okay. And then performing. I mean, he gets better. I think he gets a little bit more power in his punches. He's always been a slick, slick striker. We all know that. I mean, just from the Rufus camp, I mean, a lot of, again, the attributes that his brother has, Sergio has as well. So he's always been a really good striker, but he's getting better. He's getting a little bit more power behind his punches. I think he's getting a little bit better takedown defense. His ground game's always been good as well. So he's just a complete package. He has the ability to finish you on the feet, outpoint you on the feet. He's got the ability to finish you on the ground or obviously outpoint you on the cards as well. So Pettis could easily be undefeated coming in to this fight against Moraga. But again, he's not. And Moraga does present a problem for Pettis because Moraga does have some knockout power. Only officially, I believe, a couple knockouts on his resume. But beyond that, I mean, if you look closer, obviously Moraga is more than capable of doing some damage on the feet. He's got that wrestler's power. I mean, he does have decent wrestling in his own right as well. And that has, again, in the past been a little bit of an area that Pettis has need to work on. I mean, you know, getting off his back, even though Pettis has good takedown defense, he has been put on his back and he has been controlled on the ground as well. So Moraga uses wrestling here a little bit more than he has. I think he needs to, honestly. And I think he might implement that type of game plan. I don't know if it's going to be effective though. Pettis is, again, his takedown defense more times than not should be capable enough to keep this fight standing. And on the feet, I think Pettis is going to outpoint Moraga. Now, again, Moraga has a puncher's chance for sure. He's got some power, but I don't think he's going to be able to keep up with Pettis overall on the feet. I think Pettis does outpoint him, does land enough on the way to win on the judges' scorecards if it hits, if it does go to the cards, if he doesn't get clipped. So that's the way I'm going to go. I think, again, Moraga, ultra dangerous, even on the ground. I mean, you got to watch out for his guillotine choke. You can ask Scoggins that firsthand. I mean, so Moraga gets around most people's necks at 125 pounds. He's going to finish the fight. I mean, you can't get out. He's got that grip, that technique. He definitely has a sick guillotine choke. But that being said, I think Pettis is smart enough not to get stuck, not to get in that position and get caught in it. And then if Moraga doesn't catch him on the feet, Pettis should win this fight. So more signs to me are pointing to Sergio Pettis coming away with a win here. I know Moraga is stepping in to this fight as well. He's stepping in for Formiga on short notice. So I don't think that's going to hurt him too bad. But again, it doesn't exactly help him either. So Moraga is going to be a tough test for Pettis, but I think it's one he could pass. And I expect Pettis to actually look pretty good in this fight and be impressive and kind of keep on climbing towards maybe a potential title shot one day at 125.
I'm definitely pretty high on Sergio Pettis right now. He's been performing very adequately since dropping down to the flyweight division. Now, obviously, he had a bit of a setback in his debut against Benoit, but to get a win over Chris Carriasso, a former title challenger, and then most recently he had a very good performance against Chris Kalaitis, and right now he's on a nice little winning streak, and he's looked really good. He's been able to outpoint his opposition. He's been able to pick up takedowns. He's been able to mix up his attack with some solid boxing and kickboxing technique. He can attack with submissions. He can guard pass. He's pretty much the complete package. His main issue, obviously, is the fact that his chin isn't very good. He was clipped by Alex Caceres when he in the last fight before dropping down, and then obviously the Ryan Benoit fight did not go well for him because he was dominating it and then just bam, got caught. So, for Sergio to win this fight, honestly, I just think he needs to not get clipped. Sergio fights at a much higher pace than John Moraga, and Moraga kind of has that same tendency to sit back and let his opponents dictate everything. That's how he ended up losing his last fight, where he was facing somebody that not many people knew in Mateus Nicolau, and Nicolau just outworked him over the course of three rounds and won a split decision as a guy that kind of came out of nowhere. And Sergio Pettis, I think, is much more talented than Nicolau. Pettis has a good wrestling base to fall back on, and then Pettis has a solid jiu-jitsu game. I don't think he gets caught with Moraga's guillotine choke, and then Pettis has really good striking fundamentals, and Moraga kind of relies on just having a lot of power in his right hand and the fact that he can catch people with that guillotine choke. So as long as Pettis can avoid that big right hand from Moraga, then I think he wins a decision relatively easily. He can just outwork John Moraga over the course of three rounds. Pettis definitely does seem like he's trending in the right direction. And I don't know about getting a title shot down the line, maybe, but that's something that he is definitely about three or four wins away from first. But Pettis definitely does look like a player in the flyweight division, and this would a victory here would definitely cement it, and I am picking Sergio to win. Now, moving on to the main card, we have a bantamweight contest between Frankie Sanes, who is 11-4, and Augusto Mendez, who is 5-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Sanes, -230, the comeback on Mendez at +170. This is another mover here because it's dropped all the way down to Sanes, -145. The comeback on Mendez is +125. So overall betting action coming in on Mendez early. I mean, they do like the dog money with a very talented, hyped grappler. I mean, coming into his UFC debut against Garbrandt, a lot of people were expecting good things. Now, he was a decent dog against Garbrandt, obviously for a good reason. If you look at the result of that fight, he was doing okay in that fight. Garbrandt was definitely getting the better of the exchanges and then eventually put him out there. And obviously, it's not a bad loss now looking back at it, since Garbrandt is the champion dethroning Dominic Cruz. So making your debut against the current champion and losing, not necessarily a bad thing, especially if you do have potential, you do have some hype behind you. Now, at age 33, I mean, he's not the youngest prospect that you like to see, but at the same time, the guy is definitely another one of these guys that trains out of the MMA lab that has a ton of potential, because his jiu-jitsu is, I mean, championship level. He is an elite level jiu-jitsu practitioner, world champion, and he's developing his striking game overall. And it's decent. It's basic. It's not really that great, but he does pack a little bit of power. I mean, even if you look back at that Garbrandt fight, he was getting outstruck, but he had his moments where he landed a few good punches. And one in particular that stands out to me is he landed a pretty nice uppercut against Garbrandt that kind of made Garbrandt, at least it didn't hurt him, but it made him at least think about stuff for a second there. So he has the potential. He's got the power. His striking is actually better than it looked in that Garbrandt fight. If you look back, I mean, there's flashes of decency throughout his young career so far with his striking game. But again, all of it is basically to get the fight on the ground and to work his jiu-jitsu. That's where he excels at, and that's what he's going to try to do against Sainz as well. Now, why I open Sainz a 2-1 favorite over Mendez basically is because I think Sainz is just ahead of him right now. I mean, in the future, could we see Mendez pass him up a little bit? Sure, we could. I mean, and this is a big notch on his resume if he gets a win over a guy like Sainz, for sure. But I think Sainz overall, he's got the wrestling background. Obviously, he trains with good training partners. He's fought the better – well, I shouldn't say better competition, because obviously, again, you can't get much better than him fighting the champion. But throughout his career so far, Sainz has fought the tougher competition overall as a whole. So I think Sainz is just ahead of him. I think Sainz is the better striker of the two. He's a more consistent – it pushes a higher pace on the feet. And then again, with his wrestling, I think he should be able to keep this fight upright. I mean, if Sainz doesn't make a mistake and get his back taken or doesn't get dragged down to the ground – you know, I think he's going to probably win this fight by outpointing Mendez. And the other thing we got to consider also with this fight is Sainz doesn't have horrible submission defense. Now, again, that being said, even though Sainz has never been subbed before, can a guy like Mendez get the job done? Sure he can. I mean, Mendez is that elite on the ground that if he takes Sainz's back, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he does get the sub finish. But overall, Sainz's sub defense is good. His wrestling is good. He's a better striker here in this matchup. So I got to pick him to win. Again, I know the hype is on Mendez. A lot of people believe he's going to win this fight. We'll see. I mean, Sainz losing back-to-back fights isn't a good thing for him right now. I mean, he getting knocked out by Wineland like he did. And then, of course, the decision loss against Faber was actually respectable. A lot of people thought that he hung in there way better than they anticipated. So not a bad loss to Faber, and then getting knocked out by Wineland. I think he still has something left to prove, and he's going to still be relevant in 135-pound division, and he's going to probably win this fight over Mendez. So still got some confidence in Sainz left, even though he's lost a couple fights here, and I think he's going to win this fight over Mendez.
Frankie Sainz, even though he's on a two-fight losing streak, it's not exactly a losing streak that you can be embarrassed about. I mean, he lost to Uriah Faber in a close fight where he really turned it on Faber as Faber had gassed himself out trying to finish him and then couldn't do it. So he showcased his toughness in that fight and then was really just scrapping with Faber to the end. And then the Eddie Wineland loss, I thought Sainz was in that fight. He picked up a couple takedowns. He was holding his own on the feet, although definitely was not at the level of Wineland striking before ended up getting finished in the third round. So Sainz is definitely a tough customer. He's a guy that has picked up some quality wins in his UFC run. And I think that this is a winnable fight for him. Now, obviously, Augusto Mendez is extremely talented on the floor. If this fight goes to the floor, I don't think Frankie Sainz is going to be able to survive it. Even though Sainz is a solid veteran, and I don't think he's ever been submitted before, but this is a fight that you have to be scared of, because Augusto Mendez on the ground is one of the best fighters in the entire UFC roster. I mean, this guy, he went to the ground for about half a second against Cody Garbrandt in his UFC debut, and I think he had Garbrandt pee in his pants a little bit, because he immediately started going for an omoplata, and Garbrandt just had to shake his hand loose and just got the hell out of there, and then motioned him back up to his feet and then ended up knocking him out. But Mendez on the feet, not nearly as scary. Offensively, he's a bit wild. He looks to wing some strikes. He was a lot more cautious against Garbrandt because he understood that that was a world-class striker he was dealing with. But against Sainz, I think he'll open up a little bit more, because Sainz isn't exactly a finisher. Sainz does a lot of unique stuff on the feet. He likes spinning attacks. He likes flying knees. Sainz does some charging combinations. But for the most part, he doesn't have a ton of knockout power. So that's something that Mendez will have to fall back on that maybe he can sucker Sainz into a brawl a little bit, and then that'll open up opportunities to get it to the floor. Now, if this fight goes to the floor, I really think Mendes has a chance to win. So I am not completely counting him out of this fight, but I just don't think he's quite on the level of Sainz's striking. Now, again, Sainz hasn't looked great on the feet in his last two fights, but he was facing some really solid veterans that have years more striking experience than him against some of the best fighters in the world. And this time around, Sainz definitely should have the striking edge. He has the experience in the stand-up. He's really, as long as he can show up and bring some of that striking that he brought just in his UFC debut, he should be good enough to win. It's just all about avoiding the ground against Mendes, and I think Sainz, with his top-notch wrestling skills, should be able to do that. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have a battle between Court McGee, who is 19-5, and Ben Saunders, who is 19-7-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in McGee, minus 130, the comeback on Saunders at minus 110. So virtually pick him with a very, very slight lean towards McGee. Right now it's actually flipped the other way, but again, line margins have tightened up, so it's about similar. It's Saunders minus 115. The comeback on McGee is minus 105. So Saunders went from minus 110 to minus 115 and a little bit of a price drop for McGee as well. So basically a pick him this time right now with the lean towards Saunders. And early on, I mean, the public action was coming in a little bit more towards Saunders. A lot of people believe that, I guess, McGee is on a severe decline, and just stylistically, it's a nightmare matchup for him here. I don't know. I mean, I'm not as sold. I understand that Saunders, at least in my opinion right now, is the more dangerous fighter on the feet. He's got that length that you always have to worry about. He's got some nasty knees in the clinch. I mean, he could be a very effective striker. And McGee's been eating some punches as of late, of course. His knockout loss to Ponzinibbio doesn't help. I mean, again, beyond 32 years old in MMA years, both these guys are. I mean, they've had a lot of wars throughout their careers, and it's really been kind of tough on them as far as their overall physiques go, their bodies, you know, their time in the sport. It hasn't helped. I mean, Saunders has been knocked out four times himself, and McGee right now is the one that I'm concerned about a little bit more so. So that tells you a lot. So he has been eating some punishment that is definitely a head scratcher. Even against Dominic Steele in his last fight, even though he won, he still ate some shots in that fight as well. So I think McGee, there might be a little bit of a sign of some decline coming on with McGee, of course. But that being said, he still has a way to win this fight. And a lot of people, I think, are underestimating his wrestling ability. And I think that's what he's going to look to do here. I don't know if he's going to want to play the striking game with Saunders, even though McGee's boxing is actually legit. It's underrated at times. Again, he's not as effective as he was as of late. I mean, the last few fights, he hasn't been as much as you want to see from him. You want to see a lot better from McGee as far as his boxing goes. I mean, let's not forget, this guy has a decision win over Robert Whittaker, which we all know Robert Whittaker is torching the middleweight division right now. And of course, that was back in 2013. So that was a few years ago. But that being said, that's kind of the comparison you want to make right now. I mean, he goes out there and outpoints Whittaker in a very close competitive fight, and then struggles against a guy like Dominic Steele in his last fight. That's a big difference. So there's definitely some signs of a decline there, but I think he's still going to game plan properly, and he's going to use his strengths to his advantage here, especially against Saunders. When Saunders loses fights, it's typically against a guy that could take him down if he doesn't get knocked out. Again, he's got four losses, obviously, by knockout. But outside of that, I mean, he loses decisions by getting out-wrestled and being controlled on the ground. And I think that's what McGee's going to look to do here in this fight. Saunders has a very dangerous ground game. He's always using that rubber guard effectively. He ties you up. He makes life miserable for you on the ground. He's capable of finishing fights by submission, even off his back. So I understand Saunders is dangerous anywhere the fight takes place, but I think McGee's technically sound enough to not get caught by submission by Saunders on the ground. So I think McGee's going to control a little bit more of the action. I think on the feet, it's going to be fairly close with the advantage going to Saunders. But I think what's going to be the difference maker in this fight is McGee just kind of making it a little bit of an uglier fight, getting some takedowns. Even if the fight gets stood back up due to inactivity, I think he eventually gets another takedown along the way. And I think if he can survive and not get finished against Saunders, he probably edges out a very competitive type of decision. So I'm going to go against the grain. I know, again, Saunders is kind of the popular choice out there. I think McGee wins if he fights smart and he uses wrestling, so I'm going to go with that.
I'm a bit concerned about Court McGee. Watching him fight, his last couple bouts, he's gone out there and he really has gone away from that high volume striking that we've known him for. I mean, you go back all the way to the Josh Neer fight, he landed like 160 significant strikes in 3 rounds. That is insane. And then his last fight against Dominique Steele, a guy that is not known for his stand-up at all, or his real technique, and McGee landed 22 strikes. And that was despite him rocking Steele with the first punch he threw of the first round. So McGee has definitely changed his overall striking style as time has worn on, especially as his chin has started to deteriorate a little bit. Obviously, the Ponzinibbio fight was a bit of a wake-up call for him, where he got TKO'd, finished by strikes for the first time in the UFC, and he got put out in the first round. His last fight against Steele, he did get hurt almost every, like, significant striking exchange where him and his opponent were throwing. So, I definitely think he's aware of that flaw now in his, defense, and he's become a lot more of a defensive striker, like opportunistic, waiting for openings, and then that's when he charges in. And McGee definitely has started to go for takedowns a lot more often, as Nick mentioned. So Ben Saunders will definitely have to be on his guard about defending takedowns, but if you go and watch Court McGee's takedowns, most of them happen in the clinch, and that's where Ben Saunders does a ton of damage. He can drop some vicious elbows, he can throw some nasty knees, and then from distance, Saunders has some excellent kicks. He doesn't have a ton of pure power with his hands, but he can definitely be dangerous there. As Nick mentioned, Saunders' chin is also a bit questionable, but considering Court McGee hasn't knocked anybody out since 2009, I don't think that that's something he's going to be majorly concerned about. Now, Ben Saunders' last UFC fight didn't go great against Patrick Cote. He ended up eating a lot of uppercuts in the clinch and then getting put out, or at least hurt enough that they stopped the fight. And he left the UFC, which was kind of weird. He was on a big win streak, and then he left after his first loss, and then got a very quick, dominant win over Jacob Volkman and came right back. So it was kind of weird. And now he's back, and we'll see what happens. The victory over Volkman was a submission on the ground, so obviously Saunders' ground game is on point. He has a really, really nasty rubber guard. So even if Court McGee does get those takedowns, I don't think he's going to be threatening with much of anything. I expect Saunders to either tie him up with the rubber guard or threaten with submissions or eventually get this fight stood up. And even if McGee does repeatedly go after the takedowns for 3 straight rounds, I just think Saunders is going to do enough damage in the clinch as McGee is working for the takedowns, just bent over at his waist, that he might be able to just finish McGee or fend him off enough. So I just don't think McGee gets all the takedowns all the time, and I think Ben Saunders can do some real damage. And I expect Ben Saunders to get the win here. I think that he just has a skill set that is a good stylistic matchup for this Court McGee fight, especially now that McGee isn't as much of a threat in the stand-up. So my pick is going to be Ben Saunders. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Joe Lauzon, who is 26-13, taking on fellow lightweight Marcin Held, who is 22-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I have Lauzon minus 160, the comeback on Held at plus 120. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it is Lauzon minus 140, the comeback on Held is plus 120. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There was two-way action early on. Actually, I believe the line flipped for a second there with Held being the slight favorite, but action came back on Lauzon, and now he is, again, the slight favorite here coming into this fight. Tough fight because, I mean, a lot of people expected some great things from Held. Obviously, Held, a former Bellator title challenger. I mean, at 155, he was definitely one of the best prospects or best, I think, kind of, I want to say homegrown fighters for Bellator for sure. And they let him go here and the UFC gobbled him up and they matched him up in his first fight, making his UFC debut against a veteran that would have been a pretty decent notch on his resume against Diego Sanchez, and Held underperformed big time in that fight. And obviously he was a favorite going into that fight, and he suffered a loss. And I think a lot of people were kind of writing him off right now, thinking, oh, Held's not as good as he was. He was winning those fights in Bellator and whatnot. But I tell you what, Held is still that type of fighter it's going to keep on improving. He's only 24 years old as well. We were talking earlier about how young Pettis was. I mean, just think about that. The guy has a ton of experience against quality competition, and he's only 24 years old. So he is going to improve. And that, again, the octagon jitters in your UFC debut where you're not sometimes going to perform as much. I mean, that stuff is real. A lot of people aren't as comfortable. I mean, the pressure is on you. You're fighting a legend in Diego Sanchez in the sport. I mean, maybe he got a little bit overwhelmed and didn't perform up to his ability. He made a lot of mistakes IQ wise in that fight, which I expect him to do a little bit better, coming into this fight and being a little bit more comfortable. And I mean, he is going to be up against Lozon, which is actually a tougher test in a lot of ways than Diego Sanchez was. Diego Sanchez with his style, I mean, matchup wise was pretty tough for Held, obviously, but Lozon isn't exactly that style. So that's why I kind of lean a little bit more towards Held myself here in this matchup, because I don't think Lozon's going to put the same kind of pressure Diego Sanchez put on Held or get as much top time as Diego did against Held in that fight as well. So I think it's going to be a lot more competitive. I think if anything in this spot, Lozon's definitely, I think, the more well-rounded fighter as a whole. He is the better mixed martial artist. He has a ton of experience in his own right, and I think he's come into his own. His cardio's improved. A lot of good things about Lozon as of late. I mean, even in his last fight, I mean, you know, a lot of people actually thought that he won. I mean, he beat Jim Miller in that fight. So it was that close of a fight. So he could easily be coming into this fight with a win. And of course, he demolished Diego Sanchez before that. So Lozon, in my opinion, even though he's getting older and he's not, his body isn't going to be once what it was. I think he's not obviously past his prime, still mentally, and still a lot of attributes for him, skill set wise, has never been better. I mean, Lozon's definitely a pretty good fighter on the ground. Obviously, he's always been with the submission game, and he's developed a pretty good striking game. He has power to go along with it. So he's a tough out. But I do think that these guys are going to match up well. I think Held can hang with Lozon on the feet. I trust Held's chin a lot more than I do Lozon right now. Lozon's chin has been able to hold up decent as of late. But still, I think there is that – again, we were talking about Ben Saunders being knocked out four times in his career. Lozon has been knocked out four times as well. So even though Held's not a huge power puncher, I think he is getting a little bit better on the feet. I think he does have enough power to possibly test that chin of Lozon's. And then on the ground, I think what's going to happen here is if they do hit the ground and they exchange – submissions or whatnot, I think Held's going to actually get top position a little bit more often than Lozon is. And I think on the ground, even though – Lozon's jiu-jitsu game is off the charts as well. I think Held defensively is a little bit better. I think offensively he's going to be a little bit more dangerous than Lozon as well. So I give the jiu-jitsu edge to Held. I give the wrestling edge slightly to Held as well. And I think the stand-up is going to be pretty close, but I think Held's going to be a little bit more dangerous. So I do lean a little bit more towards Held. I think he's going to rebound nicely here and get a pretty solid win on his resume over a solid veteran like Lozon. So again, it might not be the most popular opinion. I know Lozon's going to be a tough test for him, but I think Held's going to finally get his first W in the UFC, and he's going to come away with a pretty impressive win over Lozon.
And I have to disagree. Now, Marcin Held is definitely talented, and he can be a very exciting fighter at times, but my main issue with him are a couple things. One, his conditioning is definitely something to be concerned about. He started strong against Diego Sanchez and then faded badly in the second and third rounds. And this is a guy that has fought five rounds before. Granted, he was really, really tired in that five round fight against Will Brooks, but he has gone five rounds before, and that just was not a good look. And then the second thing is, while his ground game is excellent and he does a lot of unique things, almost all of his attacks on the ground are based on him being on bottom. So I just can't agree with Nick about how Marcin Held is going to be in top position and win scrambles and everything when most of his scrambles revolve around going for heel hooks where you're on bottom, or going for triangle chokes or arm bars where you're usually on bottom. And as long as Joe Lozon can fend off the actual submission attempts, he's going to be in top position every time. It's just all about whether or not Joe Lozon's submission defense is on point, and it should be. He hasn't been submitted since Joe Soteropoulos just weathered the early storm from him and then was able to get a submission on him. And that was, I believe, over 6 years ago. So, now Lauzon and Held on the feet. Held did showcase some pretty solid striking fundamentals against Diego Sanchez, but that's the same Diego Sanchez that Joe Lauzon TKO'd in the first round. Lauzon, while he's not a world beater on the feet, he definitely is much better on the feet than Sanchez, and I expect that he should be at least as good as Held, if not better. So I can see Lauzon winning stand-up exchanges, and then when the fight does go to the floor, I see Held going to the bottom to attack with heel hooks and toe holds and knee bars. And as long as Lauzon doesn't get tapped out, then he should get top position. And then especially as Held starts to get tired, I see Held just shooting in for takedowns and flopping to his back. And that's just going to easily give automatically to Lauzon top position because of Held's poor fight IQ. So I think this is a very winnable fight for Joe Lauzon, who I think is still has plenty of gas left in the tank after another crazy fight against Jim Miller that could have gone either way. And this is a potentially really big fight for him to get back on track. So I'm going to side with Joe Lauzon. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a UFC Hall of Famer, BJ Penn, taking on number 10 ranked Yair Rodriguez. Rodriguez is 9-1, while Penn is 16-10-2 overall. And this fight is taking place in the featherweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Tough line to set. I mean, when you got a legend like BJ Penn and what he's been able to accomplish throughout his career against a young gun like Rodriguez, always difficult, not easy. But Rodriguez minus 385 was my opener. The comeback on Penn plus 265. And right now it's Rodriguez minus 485. The comeback on Penn is plus 385. So still an increase of about 100 cents right now on Rodriguez. So the hype around Rodriguez is definitely legit. He's getting that much respect over a fighter like BJ Penn. And it's amazing because a lot of times you think it would be the wrestler or somebody of that caliber that would give Penn a little bit more problems throughout his career. And Rodriguez isn't really that type of fighter. But that being said, I mean, let's look back. Penn has not really fought, obviously, since the loss to Edgar. And that was back a couple years ago in 2014. And he hasn't looked great in fights for a long time now. I mean, I think the last time he's looked actually pretty decent, in my opinion, was against John Fitch. And I believe that was back in 2011. And that was really round one for him was amazing. But that being said, so it's been that long since BJ Penn has really showed us anything that even remotely looks close to a Hall of Fame type of career, which he deserves. I mean, BJ Penn is one of the greatest all-time fighters, in my opinion. I mean, the guy, he has it all. I mean, he was the first guy that you could really say, man, you mess with this guy on the feet, he can knock you out. He's got that precise punching power. I mean, just really good hands. And then on the ground, he's got that takedown defense where it was crazy. It was so hard to take BJ Penn down. I mean, for a while there, I mean, his takedown defense was off the charts with his balance. And then once you do get him on the ground, a lot of times you don't want to be there with him. I mean, Penn had such a good submission game to go along with it. So anywhere the fight takes place, Penn was just a tough out for most people. And then to see him perform like he did against Frankie Edgar, that was just awful. I mean, we're talking about a dominant striker, a dominant jiu-jitsu practitioner, and just blown away everybody for a long time in the lightweight division before he got dethroned by Frankie Edgar. And then seeing him actually lose again to Edgar like that in his last fight was just surprising. It was just sad to see Penn look that bad. So I don't know. I mean, him coming back, I understand it. I respect the warrior in him that wants to prove that he's got something left. I mean, he just doesn't want to quit fighting. It's just in his blood. So I get it. But at the same time, I don't know. I don't want to see him suffer another bad loss. And he looks so bad against Edgar that I don't want to see him just get out, just pointed everywhere. I mean, by Rodriguez. Rodriguez right now is by far the better striker of the two, I would think. I mean, again, we're basing a lot of what we've seen lately from Penn. Rodriguez definitely the up and coming fighter that's improving fight by fight, that's getting confidence. I mean, in his last fight, it was more than impressive for me because I really needed to see this kid get tested deep, and that he did. I mean, he was able to go five rounds with Caceres, a very, again, I mean, this is, Caceres doesn't get a lot of respect out there from the diehards, but he's a very tough out. And to, for me to see Rodriguez go five rounds and his cardio holding up, that showed a lot of improvement, because that's one issue I had with Rodriguez in the past, as he started off well, but then he seemed to slow down a little bit. So again, he did definitely get tired in his last fight, but five rounds, he made it. He looked pretty good throughout the fight. And I think the kid's offense continues to improve. I mean, he's so unorthodox with his striking techniques, his movements, his ability to actually time takedowns and get top position on the ground. And then from the bottom, he's actually effective as well. I mean, Rodriguez, again, is a very complete fighter that's getting better fight by fight. And this would be a huge notch on his resume, even if it is a declining BJ Penn, if he gets a W here. And that's exactly what this fight feels like. It feels like a setup fight. I mean, Rodriguez just taking a big step forward in his career with a solid win over BJ Penn. So I'm not expecting much from BJ Penn. Maybe I'm wrong. I kind of hope I am wrong. I hope we see a throwback BJ Penn that shows up here with that dynamic, explosive boxing that is capable of knocking most people out, or that's just so really smooth underground with his submission ability and pulls off a sub against Rodriguez. I would love to see that, but I just don't think he's got it in him these days. So I hope he proves us wrong. I mean, I have that much respect for BJ Penn, but I think Rodriguez is just going to be too much for him. And I think Rodriguez eventually finds a spot and finishes Penn here in this fight.
Yair Rodriguez has definitely been on a serious upward trend since he won that Tough Latin America show. Obviously, he looked great in his last fight against Alex Caceres, especially considering it was a five-round fight, and he's been known to have conditioning issues in the third round of three-round fights. And the fact that he went all five and gutted through it and was able to win, and he looked really solid, I was very impressed. I thought Yair definitely improved that conditioning a lot more. That was his one major fault. And he really looks like he's becoming a complete fighter. Rodriguez has good takedowns. He has good dynamic striking. I mean, he can throw all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff in his attack that you just don't see coming. I mean, the jumping switch kicks, the flying spinning attacks. I mean, you name it, he's willing to throw it. And he's not afraid to, because he has such a dynamic ground game that, and he's so active and attacking with his guard that he's not afraid to fall and get taken down during a crazy spinning attack. So he has a lot to fall back on, and he's just a really exciting young fighter in the UFC featherweight division. BJ Penn, on the other hand, not so much. I mean, obviously he's a legend, and I give him all the respect in the world, but at this point in 2017, he's just not the same guy. I mean, he's basically getting this main event out of all the stuff he did in the past. He has not earned it whatsoever with anything that he's done recently. As Nick mentioned, I mean, the trilogy fight against Frankie Edgar was an absolute embarrassment. He got just destroyed in that fight. And that was a year and a half ago. You go back before that, Rory McDonald just smashed him. And then the Nick Diaz fight, he ate 178 significant strikes in that fight, even though he looked okay in the first round, and then just got absolutely murked in the second. And then before that, a draw against John Fitch. He hasn't won a fight since Matt Hughes in 2010. And that was one of the last fights of Matt Hughes' career. So there's just not a lot to like right now about current BJ Penn. He just doesn't have it anymore. And it's kind of sad watching him try to still struggle, because he's so upset about maybe not living up to his potential in the past. And I just think he's tarnishing his legacy a little bit. And I don't think that he's going to gain anything in this fight unless somehow he brings back the BJ Penn of old, but I just don't think that guy exists anymore, especially since he's still not training with Jason Perillo, who was the last guy that really had him fighting at the world-class level when he was winning incredible fights against Kenny Florian and Diego Sanchez and you name it. So I think this fight's going to be sad. I think Yair Rodriguez is going to dominate from pretty much start to finish. And then as BJ Penn starts to slow down, Yair should get a finish. I don't think it goes the full five rounds. So my pick's going to be Yair Rodriguez in a kind of depressing main event. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 103. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Saturday following the weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.